So hello and good morning and welcome to the Collisum interview series, Beyond Revenue, Bringing Purpose to Brand. So we are where conversations grounded in purpose give outdoor industry insight. Today, I have Etienne Morris with me from the Collective Engagement in Stowe, Vermont. So excited to get into this juicy topic with Etienne this morning. But first, let me just frame the conversation for us. So purpose-driven companies go beyond offering the role of a product or a service to develop programs that have a social or an environmental impact. As it's known, social enterprise is bringing more meaning to business, to what we do, and it's an exciting topic to explore if you as an individual want to make a difference in your career, in the world, as well as from the perspective of a business. So we believe in what's called the quadruple bottom line, which is or is expressed as people, planet, place, and purpose. So that's what we're diving into today. So welcome, Etienne. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Claire. I really, really am excited about this.
Yeah, I feel like every time we talk, we always run out of time. We're always waiting for the next conversation. So let's see what we can get in here in 30 minutes and what shows up that's new. So I'll tell us a little bit about you. So Etienne is the founder CEO of Collective Engagement. It's an employee engagement solutions provider focused on providing companies with framework and programming that measurably increases engagement, resulting in happier, more fulfilled employees and a stronger bottom line for the business. She is also the president CEO of Morris Recruiting and Consulting, fondly known as MRC, founded in 2012, which offers customized recruiting services and career strategy for private clients, and most notably, the University of Vermont Sustainable Innovation MBA program. Etienne certainly walks the talk. She is a certified B Corp, a women's business enterprise, a member of 1% for the Planet, and the Vermont Business School of Social Responsibility. The fun part is that she lives in Vermont, her hometown of Stowe, with her husband, Paul, and her two dogs, Teeny Weeny and Snoopy. And secondly, her children, Marco and Jack. I love that the dogs are listed first. It's fantastic. Close to my heart.
We weren't sure if the kids were going to be staying with us. It was a COVID situation that just ended up in perpetuity.
So. Well, yes. Wonderful. I'm a mama for mama as well. So we'd like to include them. Great. So in my world, I speak purpose 24/7, but not everyone is as knowledgeable about it or is aware of it. And we all have our own slant. So mm-hmm. How do you define purpose?
So I think of it as being something, connecting to something that's bigger than yourself. And specifically in a way that benefits other people. As it pertains to employee engagement, purpose is actually one of the things that's needed at work in order for employees to be engaged. So not only is purpose important for, you know, for a company to have a defined purpose as part of their, you know, mission, vision, and values. I think purpose is right up there with those top three, which have gotten people talk about that a lot in the last 10 years, I think, but purpose, one of those important things for companies, but it is equally as important, if not more so, for the employees of companies to have purpose. The other two are belonging and growth. So,
So the purpose of the individual hopefully aligns with the purpose of the organization so that when you show up to work, it enlivens you.
Yeah, the purpose when it comes to employee engagement, purpose has a slightly different meaning, which is to be doing purposeful work that that leverages your abilities, your aspirations, and your strengths.
Okay, and so when you've been in the world of recruiting and career coaching for decades, is this Is this a new discussion? You know, what have you seen change in the industry in your time? Because yes, mission, vision, values, it's you know, it's on the wall, it's framed.
Right.
I would add, you know, a new fourth framed item, but I certainly want it to go beyond just hanging in the frame. So how have you seen the industry? Yeah. How have you seen it change?
So just specifically to purpose, I think what I've seen is the biggest change is that, and I'd like to see more of it. So I hang with a lot of B Corps, right? So we tend to have a little bit more of a progressive, enlightened view of the world, but to be thinking of our employees as human beings rather than human resources. Mm. I think that's the biggest shift. And what I find ironic with that is that for the companies that are doing it, for the companies that aren't doing it, they may look at that, like over the fence. Oh, look at those companies over there that are, you know, that are being all, you know, all like soft and loving and tree huggy about their employees. But there's so many benefits that that connect directly to the company. When you start treating your employees like human beings. So not only do the employees, they're allowed a sense of, you know, happiness and fulfillment at work, and that's promoted, but there are literally 12 measurable ROIs to businesses, their business key performance metrics that either improve positively or decrease, you know, in a positive way that affect the bottom line of a business, all connected to employee engagement and you know, having allowing employees to find purpose and meaning at work. In terms of real shift in the marketplace, like what I've seen in my, you know, 30-year career, mm-hmm. I think that one of the biggest changes has been just in the world of work in general. The idea somebody has to stay with a company for 5+ years in order for them not to be considered, you know, job hoppy or unreliable. There have been some major events, whether they happened specifically within the United States, I'm talking about the US market here, or whether they've been global events, things like, I wrote a couple down here, things like in the early 2000s, well, there was 1975, there was what was called stagflation that happened. That was pre my time in business. But then there was a 1982 recession. There was a 2001 dot-com bust. There was a 2002 Sarbanes-Oxley, which deregulated or which caused in management consulting financial services to be separated from, you know, auditing, or, you know, consulting to be separated from auditing. All of these things, and then more recently there was the Great Recession of 08-09, pandemic of 2020. All of these things created major shifts in the marketplace that resulted in many times huge layoffs. So over time, as a recruiter, specifically that came into this business in the early 2000s, I saw that if a recruiter that I was looking to hire for one of my clients was, and I was working in Big Four recruiting at the time for a boutique firm, but if one of them had like a 2-year job, you know, window where nothing was happening during those 2 years, or they put in, you know, what everybody puts in consultant for 2 years, which is, you know, I'm out of work for 2 years. Right. That eventually that wasn't looked at as the negative thing, because we all understood that most consultants got laid off during that time. So all of a sudden, seeing those gaps and seeing like more abbreviated times at work wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Then what ended up happening in the last like 5 to 10 years, we have Gen Zs and millennials who are really wanting something more from work. You know, they're wanting meaning and purpose at work. They're wanting growth opportunities. They're mm-hmm. wanting, you know, belonging. And if they're not getting it, they're leaving. And I've talked to people on both sides of this issue. I'm familiar with both sides of this issue in business, in my business, and in consulting for other people's businesses. And the, you know, the one way of looking at it, the negative way of looking at it, where you feel something is taking away is, you know, oh, these entitled people, you know, they want, they want work to provide all of these things to them. Mm-hmm. And it's not our job to make sure that, you know, people are happy at work. Well, it should be. In my opinion, it should be the company's job to make sure that people are happy at work, because when they do focus on people's happiness at work, they strengthen their business. Sure. It's a really a win-win if you look at it from the perspective of additive, not subtractive.
Sure.
Those are some of the biggest shifts I've seen.
I have so many thoughts spinning. Let me see if I can interject them back in. So I saw, you know, I equally was part of the 24/7 culture yep. and the, it's not our job to make you feel good at work and the shift of that. And I think there's been two pieces I've seen. One is that, that are positive in terms of, you know, I have a cell phone that works 24/7 and I must be available, and the younger generation saying that's not healthy. We have seen the repercussions of our parents that lived yep. that life and, mm-hmm. and the shift towards a greater purpose, because looking at, you know, generationally, you can see each generation before what we learn and how we right. hopefully improve upon that. So I'm curious, I won't quiz you, but I'm curious what some of the 12 metrics are.
Yeah.
And can you explain for our audience, the Enlightened B Corp, you know, world. So in simple sure. terms, like it is also a growing population, certainly, but it's
up to 5,000 now.
5,000 global or US?
Global.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. So tell me about B Corps and some of the metrics that are an additive to yeah. having employee engagement and purpose.
Absolutely. So in terms of the metrics, there are these are all studied. The studies that I found are the most comprehensive are the ones that have been done by Gallup. There are other studies done by other organizations that that have found similar results, but none of them are as comprehensive as Gallup. So other studies might be looking at a slice where they might find five or six of these. Gallup is the one that has found all 12 and they make a lot of sense, or 11 actually. When you look at, and I can give you percentages too. So when you're looking at the median percent difference between the top quartile of businesses that are doing these things and the bottom quartile. So you've got productivity, both in sales and production, and those both increase by between 14 and 18%. You've got customer loyalty and engagement that increases by 10%. Profitability increases by 23%.
23%. Wow. 23%.
I mean, we are not talking about like 1 or 2% things here. These are major differences.
Right.
Well-being, which is how your employees are thriving, 66% increase.
Wow.
Organizational citizenship, which means are the employees participating in the things that you are offering through your organization, 13% increase. And then I know it's a strange way of looking at it, but the reductions are just as important because they're reductions of negatives, right? Mm-hmm. So absenteeism, this is going to blow you away. Absenteeism is decreased by 81%.
Wow.
Safety incidents, 64%.
I was blown away by the 23, and now we're in the 60s and the 80s.
It's crazy. So there's a subcategory of clinical care, patient mortality and falls, 58% decrease. The rest of it is generic to all company, you know, all types of companies. Turnover, between 18 and 43%. And the reason for the variation is they created two categories of company. Organizations that typically have 40% annualized turnover, that's reduced by 18%. And organizations with 40% or lower annualized turnover, and that decreases by 43%. And then shrinkage or theft, 28% decrease, and defects in quality, 41% decrease. Mm-hmm. So when companies are saying, oh, all this, you know, blah, 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 you know, take care of your employees, just, I just want them here. I want them to do their damn jobs. Right. Mm-hmm. That is not a good business decision. A good right. business decision is how do I take care of my employees? Because then my company will thrive.
Right. And that's part of that, quadruple bottom line. And I think what is still not seen is that you don't have to have one or the other. Like, yes, you must have, you know, profit, you must have revenue.
Right.
And there is so much data that shows when you add purpose, you actually grow faster. You have higher profits. You have all of that. And so
in
the target market of Collison's clients, we're looking at founders, leaders, and growth stage.
Yeah.
And we're looking at why is it beneficial to think about becoming a B Corp, to plan for it, to engage, to look at your values and align your staff when you're hiring, when you're doing all these pieces, all the affiliates that you work with, all the contractors that you work with, that they align in value and purpose so that
absolutely.
It is seamless. So, you know, when we look at these things of, hey, I'm just getting started. I can't, you know, I don't want to be a B Corp yet, but to integrate that and begin to think about it. So what has, you know, for you as an entrepreneur, what has been the benefit of your 1% for the planet or your women business enterprise of your B Corp and what tips would you give to, you know, to a leader who is growing their business?
Well, one thing I want to say is that in the B Corp community, like I was actually shocked that we didn't have more than 5,000 when we just hit that benchmark like a week ago. But then when I really sat down to think about it, it made sense to me because of the 5,000 companies that have the B Corp certification, there are hundreds of thousands, if not more than that, who have taken the B Corp assessment. Hmm. So in my view, it's not actually at the end of the day that important that a company has a B Corp certification. It's great, but I'm more jazzed by companies that aspire to similar values. So you could take as a company, as a founder of a small, you know, business that's growing, you could engage in the B Corp assessment without going through all of the hoops of doing the certification, just to kind of get a sense of like where you are on the spectrum. How would you score in the area of people? How would you score in the area of your supply chain and things like that? And use that as a, you know, use that as a motivator, you know, to do better. I first was certified in 2013. I went through a recert in 15 and 17. My 2020 recertification was delayed because of COVID. I'm actually in the middle of it now. And one of the things that I've loved about the recertifications, and you can apply the same thing if you're interested in just doing the assessment and then, you know, playing around with the data that you find that you've uncovered about yourself, is I like playing with like how can I do better. So for instance, in 2017, I decided that one of the things I wanted to do was shift all of my banking from a local bank, but it really isn't. It's considered more of a national bank. Mm-hmm. It's regional, but still it's not considered a B Corp, you know, style bank, which would be more of a B Corp bank, or it would be a credit union, you know, that really the money goes directly back into your community, which is super local, hyper local. So I decided that's what I was going to do. It took me, I dragged my feet a while because it's a big deal and I don't do anything half measure. So if I was going to do this for my company, I was going to do it for my accounts, my children's accounts, like everything. Mm-hmm. So there were actually like 9 different accounts I needed to transfer. And I've got electronic fund transfers connected to things. Like
the process.
Yeah. It's a big process. Yeah. So I waited about 2 years. I'm like, I got to do it. I got to do it. Cause I want this done, you know, for my next research. So in 2019, I ended up, I was looking at credit unions, but I ended up going with Muscoma Bank that had recently just moved to Vermont. And so I, over the course of 6 months, it took me about 6 months to complete it. I transferred every single one of our accounts. My kids were like, Mom, what are you doing? It was working fine. I'm like, nope, we're going B Corp.
And yeah, there's so many opportunities to do that. I think, you know, as a growing company, the earlier you can bake it in, these can be initiatives. Yeah. You don't have to do it all at once. And there are many assessments that you can go, that you can take free of charge. And I think it is, you need to be thoughtful about when you choose to actually go for the certification, because it will help you. You need to make some significant decisions before you get there. But then when you run into these challenges, as you will, you've already thought about it. And so I really like that thought of like what, you know, how help you and help your team to step into this and, or, you know, join the organizations like 1% for the Planet, where you are among like-minded individuals.
Exactly.
It's a great place to collaborate. It's a great place to rise together, to learn, you know, to learn from your peers. We're all about sort of trying to share that. So
absolutely.
So I'm so curious to hear. So you recently launched your collective engagement.
Yes.
Can you tell me the inception point of it and like what's the purpose behind your specific model?
Yeah, absolutely. So, so the short answer I've been using lately is to spread love and happiness throughout the land. So that's really what my thought was, but it really all started from the one-on-one work I do with my private clients. They often share with me, people will find me and they will share with me that they're unhappy and unfulfilled. They want to leave their, you know, their job at a company that they might've been with for, you know, 10, 15 years. Most of the people that come to me are, you know, 40 plus, separate from the students I work with at UVM. And working with me, working through my process with me, very often they would decide to stay. And they would have like, they would have a new resume. So if they wanted to leave, they could, but in the process of creating this new resume and collaboratively working on their body of work together and reflecting back on what they've done and thinking about where they want to go, they came out of the process with a renewed appreciation for their own skills and experiences. They reconnected with their intrinsic motivation. Like why did I start doing this work? Like what is it that's important to me? What their why is, right? They would often had like a values alignment sort of epiphany that would happen. And they would recognize and exercise the agency that existed for them at work. And so in November of 2019, I'd been, you know, this had been happening over and over and over again.
Right, you're sort of like seeing the signs going, the universe is banging eventually.
Exactly. So it was around November of 2019. I came up with this idea of creating a business to business model where the work that I was doing with individuals could be applied to a business. So a business would then, you know, pay my company to do this work with all of their employees. And the other reason I like that is I am a progressive. I don't like the idea of something being too expensive for somebody that really needs it. So it's one of the things that really has always bothered me about my own business is that, you know, my fees are fairly, you know, fairly high, you know, in
as they should be with your expertise,
grand scheme
of years in business. Yes.
but what makes me feel sad is that, you know, that means that people that could really use me can't afford me. And that bothers me. So one of the ways I do that, I deal with that personally is I have a commitment to, at least 5%, if not more, pro bono services, that I provide to, you know, to people that can't afford me. And that's one of the ways that I justify having higher rates is that, you know, then that allows me the time and the time and the space to help those pro bono people. But the idea of the business-to-business model is really the democratization of that opportunity. How many people on the manufacturing room floor have the opportunity to work with a coach one-on-one? Mm-hmm. You know, very, very few, right. Very few. Mm-hmm. And so the model that I built, I spent about 2 years researching this. Well, a year researching, a year research operationalizing. I don't think I'm ever done with the research. I think it'll be a lifetime of research. But
eyes going, yes,
exactly. But I spent a solid year researching before I started operationalizing, and then now we're ready to launch. And the idea is to work with leaders. So there's a top down component to the work that we do, mm-hmm. To work with the employees, which is bottom up, providing them the strengths-based, you know, coaching, mm-hmm. and then inside out, which is gently guided introspection that gets them through their values, their strengths, their skills and experiences, and how they might want to apply that moving forward in their careers. Mm-hmm. And so it's top down, bottom up, inside out. And honestly, I haven't seen anything else out in the market that really does that. And I'm really excited to be offering it to companies.
I'm having a flashback to a conversation we had, and forgive me, I don't remember the term, but I think of it as an intranet of the staff, where Claire is going to have a meeting with ATN tomorrow. And yes. The software tells me ATN likes, tell us about that.
Yeah. Yes. What you're talking about is, In the operationalizing phase, which is the second year that I was working on this, I researched and identified a number of technology partners that I wanted to work with as part of my offering. And what you're describing is something called Cloverleaf, which we're as part of our model, the inside out working one-on-one with people model, that we're using and as one of the assessments. There's many awesome assessments out in the world. The one that we've chosen to work with at Collective Engagement is StrengthScope, which is a strengths focused assessment that has an overlay of energy. So it's like it's you can start to identify when you are in your flow state. What do you need to be in your flow state? That's that state we all love.
Talk my language. Being in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, when we're most productive and time just flies by. So we like StrengthScope as our assessment tool. But on top of that, what we found was, and because one of the principal consultant that I hired to work with me to help create the curriculum is we found Cloverleaf, which is sort of an aggregator of the, I think they have 10, the 10 best and most widely used and highly regarded assessment tools in the world. They use DISC, you know, Myers-Briggs, Strengths Finder, Strengths Scope, Enneagram. There's yeah. like 10 of them. What they have is a dashboard where it's connected not just to your, you know, to you, so that you have access to it, but it's connected to your calendar and your email and things like that, so that it'll give you like little tips. If you sign up for it, you don't have to sign up for it, but I like my daily tips. So it'll give you a daily tip. It might be an introspect tip. It might see in your calendar that you've got a meeting. Oh, ATN and Claire have a meeting today. So it might give you a tip about our meeting. Like, remember, Claire really likes to be told information in stories, or Claire is a real collaborator. So, and because this thing is you and Claire is a real collaborator, you might want to bring this topic up at the meeting, something
so
like
powerful
that.
I mean, to be able to think differently about how you engage with your team, and be thoughtful about this works for them, this is their style,
exactly,
so that you can come together. I love it. It reminds me of the languages of love, or just different styles. I was just working on the three different types of listening, mm-hmm. and how to do that. So I think that's fascinating. So I'm watching time.
The dashboard also includes the ability to go into the dashboard to look things up about yourself, to pair yourself up with anybody else that's in the company, mm-hmm. so that you could prepare for a meeting, or you could prepare for a conversation. I've heard that it's been really helpful for people that have had conflicting interpersonal styles, where they just they they're not really connecting, but they don't really understand why. It's been, I've heard anecdotally directly from people that have experienced this, that has completely transformed their ability to communicate with people at work. You can also create teams. You can look at existing teams, mm-hmm. and you can create teams, and you can see where there's overlap and where there's gaps in skills and styles. It's a fascinating tool.
Yeah. Possibilities seem endless.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So I'm watching our time. We have about 5 minutes left. Yeah. So we're going to do our rapid fire questions to wrap it up. But before that, I'd like your thoughts of a tip for a growth stage founder. So this is, you're maybe 2-3 years into business. You might have a few employees. So either for the founder or for the leadership, what would your tip be around employees and purpose?
Okay. So I thought you fed me this question before, so I did have some time to think about it. So I appreciate that. In order to build a highly engaged team, what you want to do is pay attention to those three needs at work that I mentioned at the top of the show, which is belonging, purpose, and growth. So belonging in this context, to be part of a supportive community and team. Purpose is purposeful work that leverages abilities, aspirations, and strengths. And growth is opportunities to learn, grow, and reach. There's a second layer on here that I'd like to add from Marcus Buckingham's work, Love and Work. Build human variation into the design principle of your work. So if you focus on those things for your employees, you will by default have engaged employees. You can't not have them. Mm-hmm. And then a bonus piece of information, just a little factoid, is that, and this is highly studied, a person only needs to be in a flow state 20% of their time at work in order for them to feel fulfilled and happy. So it's not like some insurmountable Mount Everest type thing that you have to create here. You have to be purposeful enough to want to create this environment where your employee can experience it 20% of their time at work. Yes. This is not rocket science. You can do this. People
yes,
can do this.
Yes. And it's, oh my gosh, it's so the inspiration, the aspiration, the focus that once you get that 20%, what that does for your life in work and out is so just like, yes, overflowing. It's the gas tank as I explain it. So it's fantastic. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. You're okay. Welcome.
So our secret rapid fire question. So this is all about answer what comes to top of mind first thing out. What was the last outside outing that you went on?
Oh gosh. That's been one of my focus areas in the last few weeks. I just got back from a trip to Austin with my new business coach. We had some one-on-one time, and it happened to overlap with my best friend who also had her second year one-on-one time with the same coach. So we ended up getting a condo together, an Airbnb condo together, and we walked through the city of Austin, all over Austin for the entire day and just had a blast.
Ooh, exploring city. Awesome. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. And your favorite advocacy or nonprofit group?
I would say 1% for the planet, because again, it's kind of an aggregator, and it incentivizes you to, to kind of spread the wealth. This year, two new places that I donated to in support of my commitment to 1% for the planet was Reef Renewal USA, which is an organization that my principal consultant is a board member of. So I became aware of the work that they're doing to save our oceans. And then another one was Vermont State Parks. So it's fun because share your financial support across all sorts of different organizations. So to
define this for those that don't know, 1% for the planet is an organization where you commit to donating 1% of your revenue annually to nonprofits within their organization. So nonprofits register, and then you donate through that. So, you know, I think of it, I'm a member, Cultum as a member as well. And we pick new organizations each year. And I do a mix of local in my community, which aligns with the values of our organization, as well as global. So it's just an amazing resource to learn as well as to align that the values and the purpose. So fantastic.
Exactly. And what I like about the two examples I gave you is neither one had previously been registered with 1%. Mm-hmm. So I nominated them and they fulfilled their application and were accepted into the program. So those are now two new members of 1%.
Hey, passing it on. Fantastic. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And finally, a favorite professional book or podcast.
Yeah. So I have been really, I just mentioned to you the gentleman who wrote Love and Work, Marcus Buckingham. Mm-hmm. I've been really loving on him lately. I can't get enough of stuff that he says. Like it's so resonant for me, and it's so core to the work that I am like completely, you know, up to my eyeballs in for the last 2.5 years that I just you know, soak it up. Delicious.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Mark,
so I think his most recent book is called Love Plus Work. I don't know if it's called Love and Work or if people say the word plus, but it's Love and Work. And his name is Marcus Buckingham.
Wonderful. So I will put all of these pieces that you just mentioned in the show notes.
Super.
So any last minute questions or comments you want to get in before we wrap it up?
No, I don't know. I mean, this was so much fun. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about employee engagement. I love the subject. Even though, you know, my business is designed to help companies, you know, accomplish this, you can do a lot of this on your own. You know, if you are purposeful, and if it's something that's important to you, I encourage you to just take steps and start thinking of your employees as human beings and not human resources. And that's the first step in creating a really great environment for them to thrive and for your business to thrive.
Perfect. It's a perfect wrap up. Well, thank you for joining me, ATM. Wonderful as always to see you, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Claire. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Bye-bye. Thank you.